reconciling and making sure all three of those questions, who am I, who do people see me as, and who do I want to be, align. And that's going to change because we're multidimensional and we change.
Welcome back to season 4 of the Women on the Move podcast. I'm your host, Sam Saperstein. Women on the Move is a global initiative at JP Morgan Chase designed to help women grow their businesses, improve their financial health, and build their careers. This season, we're taking you inside JP Morgan Chase's annual Women's Leadership Conference, where we addressed critical issues affecting women. Our diverse speakers shared leadership lessons and career tips and taught us how to take care of our well-being. Overall, they had one thing in common: optimism about the future and unwavering positivity. It's a fascinating season you won't want to miss. This year, for the first time, we decided to bring in a host for our leadership event. When we started thinking of the perfect woman for the job, Allie Love immediately came to mind. Allie does it all. She's a wellness guru, Peloton instructor, host, and entrepreneur. At Women's Leadership Day, she took us through her three M's: matter, mind, and meaning, to help our audience stay grounded and present throughout the event. Allie graciously sat down with me to discuss her journey to becoming a leader at Peloton and the vision she has for herself and her company, Love Squad. Allie, thank you so much for being here with us today on our Women on the Move podcast. It's great to speak to you.
I am so grateful to be here with you, Sam. It's just exciting to be a part of Women on the Move and, of course, to have this conversation.
So, Allie, you're a Peloton instructor, the host of the Brooklyn Nets, a health coach, and the founder and CEO of Love Squad. So that is a lot of things that you juggle and do, which is very impressive and sounds very exhausting to me. But I'd love to start out and ask you, what does a typical week look like for you? And how do you balance all of those responsibilities?
That's interesting, Sam, because typical is not something that I subscribe to. I don't think that there is a typical week in sincerity. And the reason is because I look at my life like a buffet, where I'm not someone who wants to order an already curated plate of food off of a menu. I like to a la carte it. I like to switch it up. And that's something that I knew since I was a young kid, is I like to do multiple things and I like to do it differently every day. There's an excitement and a thrill, some adventure and spontaneity, and waking up fresh on a day and saying, hey, what's on my calendar? What's on my agenda? What's on my to-do? And so I think when I look at my career, I pride myself on it not being typical, not necessarily a vertical career. There's nothing wrong with a vertical career. I definitely, all my bosses out there that have vertical careers, you go. But in terms of something that I know where I find joy and I find excitement, is specifically around the concept of this slash generation of wearing multiple hats and doing different things throughout my weeks.
So I love that you take a real portfolio approach almost to a career with all these different things. And as you said, it sounded like you always wanted to have that for yourself growing up and even when you were younger, thinking about your career.
Absolutely. I think we talk about diversifying our portfolio. I often talk about diversifying our training program, but in specifically, I guess in this case, it's diversifying your career choices or career options or even career titles. And I think, yeah, at a young age, I knew that there was a lot in this world. And I guess growing up in Miami, Florida, I didn't necessarily have the opportunity to travel with my family. We were a middle class family, very blue collar. We hustled, my mom and dad, and made it happen. But I got to see it all on TV. And I said, you know what, if there's a world out there, I want to live it. And so I've always been adventurous inside and out in terms of not only being able to travel the world as an adult at forging opportunities, but also when it comes to my career. I know we get so caught up in what's my life purpose, or like, what's that one job? I need to get that one job. And I've been in that position multiple times. And what I realize and I find solace in is that it might not be that one thing, that one person, that one job, that one situation. It can be multiple. And so this concept of moving away from the one and only, and just living a little bit more has been a part of me. I think it comes from my dad a little bit. He's like the hippie of the family. And I feel like he's given me that, like, yeah, when it comes to life, you work hard, don't overly stress about it. There's a lot out there.
That's such a freedom in a way, to give yourself permission to do a lot of things and not find the one right thing. So what would you tell, especially younger women who are thinking about starting out? And a lot of people think, I must find that one perfect job, or I'm going to have to aspire only to one thing. What would you say to them, just given what you've built for yourself and what you see as possible?
I think I could probably use Sheryl Sandberg's words better than I could articulate it, is that a career is a jungle gym. And so there's never a straight line. There's never usually a destination. To quote Kim Scott, there are times in our lives where we're superstars and then we're rock stars. Superstars are when we're in that jungle gym and we're swinging, baby. We want more. We want to do more. We want to experience more. And then there are moments in our career, in our lives, where we're rock stars, where we just want to be here, do well, and stay in this one place. And so understanding that those moments in our lives are interchangeable, I think when I think about the listeners out there, in particular a young woman or non-binary or non-gender conforming person who's listening and saying, yeah, I just kind of want that one career, that is a great goal to have, but also understand that the first step and the second step may take you in a different direction. And being open to that, listening to your gut, listening to intuition. And I am a person who, I will say, I have this sensation around spontaneity and enjoying life, but I am pragmatic. I am realistic. So I do balance it out of listening to my gut, listening to my heart, but also listening to my head and asking for advice. But maybe it's not necessarily that one, it's just that one step for now.
So you said something along the lines that you don't want to be just inspirational, you want to be aspirational. So tell us what you mean by that and why that choice of words is so important as people think about the role models they have and how to really internalize the things that you're coaching them to do.
Thank you for asking me this and noticing the difference in those two words. And so this actually came to me when I started my Peloton journey as an instructor. I would often see on the homes of members when they would share on social quote boards. I too on social always, I have a love note where I write a little note and I put it on my Instagram, a motivational quote, a reminder. And the reality is that you can find these things on Pinterest, you can find them in your home, you can find them on your own social media or on your refrigerator like I have in my home growing up. And that is inspiration. You can read something and it moves you. It gives you a little bit of goosebumps. It gives you that maybe internal butterflies in your stomach. But I think the reality is that the difference between those that are successful and those that aren't quite there yet is that they turn that inspiration into action and they become aspirational and they're doers of the motivational quotes or those concepts or those parables or cliches. They're the people that people talk about. They're the people that they write stories about. They're the people that the cliches were created for and about. And so when I think of being inspirational versus being aspirational, I would always encourage myself to push my brand to the point. And when I mean brand, those of you out there, you can use it interchangeably if you don't like the word brand, with reputation, my social responsibility. I often push myself to the point to say, is what I'm doing with my life encouraging people to take steps, to move, not just their body, but of course their mind, their thought pattern. And so to me, that's the difference. Inspirational, goosebumps, butterflies, makes you smile. You might even have a little bit of an epiphany and like, oh, wow, that's inspiring. And then aspirational is like, you know what? I heard that. And here's my next step. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I did. And I think that that's the difference.
It's a huge difference. So I love that. So for people listening, it's that taking action step that you really want them to go forward, not just feel good, but actually do something. So I love that. We're going to hang on to that. I think you've brought that aspirational approach really to two big things you're doing right now. Obviously, one is Love Squad, which you started, and the other is the Peloton community. But let's start with Love Squad. Tell us what it is and who you're targeting. What's your audience?
Absolutely. So Love Squad was created out of a sheer lack of resources and frustration as a young woman in New York City. I don't know if any of you have had this situation that are listening, but I came to New York wanting to follow my big dreams. And whether it was New York or another place or even in your own hometown, following your dreams can be daunting. It can be overwhelming. You don't know where to start. And so in my case, I came to New York and I wasn't in any rooms where I was around women that looked like me or women that had a variety of experience and thought that could influence me in terms of networking, in terms of building my career, in terms of providing insight to what the next steps, talk about taking that one step, what that one step might be or look like. And so I was completely lost for a while. And it was, again, coming to that point, I was frustrated. And I didn't have the resources to reconcile this. And what I mean by that is, I mentioned my family, you know, again, blue collar, hardworking. My mom and dad are amazing, did a great job. If they're listening, you did a great job. And so with that, I didn't necessarily have the resources at my fingertips to buy tickets to events or go hear panels of other people that were inspiring to listen to. I didn't have that. And so I sat down one day and I was like, am I going to complain about this or am I going to boss up and figure it out? Because I know that I'm not alone. And in most times in my life, I actually lean on that, Sam, is that I'm not alone. I know that my situation may be unique and a little different, but I'm not alone in going through something similar as other people. And so what I like to do is I like to provide a solve. And so I created a small business that probably no one at the time cared about, and I called it Love Squad. Love is my real last name. I called it Squad. I wanted to be as inclusive as possible. Everyone's invited. And I wanted to basically offer the information that I had learned as a young woman, still being a young woman in New York City, at a low to no cost. As we know, access is expensive. Knowledge and information is expensive. So I wanted to break down that barrier and take away that wall, that point of entry. And so I invited my friends to an event. I partnered with a space, got everything for free using the gift of gab, as you can tell. Invited women in my industry that were doing amazing work. I had about 3,000 followers, which is a lot of followers. I'm not going to knock that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, but not all of them lived in New York. Mm-hmm. And so I invited everyone on my Instagram and I said, hey, come out. This event will be free. You'll get a gift bag. You'll get food. Make sure you have sustenance and everything. And you're going to get access to these women speaking about their career and how they made it. You're going to get information for free. And what ended up happening was I put that out there in 15 seconds on Eventbrite. I sold out. We could only hold 50 people, Sam. Again, small event, did what I could. Sold out 50 people in 15 seconds in a 75-person wait list. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, people want to come. I will tell you on the low, since it's just me and you, yes. I didn't tell the people on the wait list they couldn't come, even though we could only hold 50. We packed out the house.
Yeah.
You know, because again, information and networking is expensive. And so we had that event. It was successful. And I will say I walked away from that event realizing for the first time in a very long time that this is what I was made to do. I was made to hold space, create and curate community, and have conversation. And so that's what I did. Love Squad became a thing. In terms of our target audience, the interesting thing is most times, you know, as a businesswoman, when you're looking, you have to have a target audience. You have to make sure that your marketing and your branding goes towards that target audience and you're speaking their language and all of that. Because at the end of the day, there's a bottom line. Our target market is so vast that it's representative of our country. It's very diverse in age, race, and culture, which is what we pride ourselves on. One of the founding principles of Love Squad is I remember walking into an event in New York City and I was the only Black woman there. And possibly, I think, the only woman of color. And I left right away. And I said, I'd never want a Love Squad event to be that. I want you to walk into the room and I want you to feel like you belong. You don't want it to be homogenous and like everyone looks the same. Right. But when you walk in, you see diversity because innovation and progress comes from a diversity of thought and seats at the table. And so if I wasn't holding space, there's no way that I was able to progress and feel good about my career.
No, I love that. And I think we feel the same way too. I mean, that all these movements have to be for all women, no matter who you are, age, background, it has to serve all. I mean, that is a fundamental truth and starting point. So I love the fact that you brought that to so many people and resources that I'm sure many women are really desperate for. So thank you. I think that's a huge value. This year too, especially, is giving a lot of people cause to rethink their priorities. What do they want to do? What's their focus? How do they prioritize health and their well-being? You know, things we talked about at our leadership day. So what do you recommend to people, especially now when they want to make a change? How can they start to make that change, especially when they don't know where to start?
One, I applaud you for your vulnerability of even deciding to make a change personally if you're in that position, because that's not easy. Coming to the realization of, hey, I need to change my life or I need to change something about me. One, it's not an easy pill to swallow. And two, most people rather not think about it. So again, I applaud anyone who's in that position or even something similar. But I would say the first step is to answer these three questions. And these three questions aren't easy to answer and take all the time you need. But this is how I had my moment. I think in the time of my career, again, like as a young woman in the city before even Love Squad occurred, I was lost. I told you, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I remember walking down the street and a moment of frustration of like, who is Allie Love? And I would always say, Sam, I'm a good person. I'm a good person. What does that mean? I couldn't tell you what that meant. That was my description of self. Who are you? I'm a good person, but nothing else.
Yeah.
And so I got frustrated with myself because I didn't have any other answers. And then I realized internally, having internal dialogue, there are three questions, three fundamental questions in this self-awareness that we should ask ourselves. I do it biannually because we change often. So it takes time to even come to these answers, but it's who are you? Who do you want to be? And who do people see you as? Yeah. Who are you? Being able to articulate beyond I'm a good person for myself is really important. I am an empath. I am a motivational speaker. I'm a leader. I'm fun, which is important. I'm totally your favorite party guest. I'm approachable, which is also important, and I am inclusive. The second question is, who do people see you as? Being able to make sure that all three of these questions have the same answer is important. Mm-hmm. And so if I ask you, Sam, of like, after, you know, we've met a couple of times just virtually because we're experiencing a pandemic and I was a part of the event, I'm pretty sure some of the things that I just laid out, you might say about me. You might say, yeah, Allie, I see you as those things. I knew you a little bit before. That translates on social. That's what I want to leave people with, right? And then the last thing is, do I want to be all those things? Is that ultimately who I want to be? And so reconciling and making sure all three of those questions, who am I, who do people see me as, and who do I want to be, align. And that's going to change because we're multidimensional and we change. But just know in those moments of your life, you want to be able to articulate all those things. And I think it doesn't come easy. It takes time. It takes you thinking about it. And I encourage you to have those conversations with your internal love squad, with your BFFs, your moms, your coworkers, and say, yeah, crowdsource. Who am I, y'all? When I leave this room, what do you say behind my back? Tell me, be honest.
Crowdsource feedback. I love it. I just love how you express that too, because it's doable. It's very, I don't want to say simple because it's hard to think of those things, but you don't need technology to do it. You can do it anytime you're comfortable. You can build on these things over time, depending on how far you push yourself and in your thinking. So I love that. And it's funny, as you're describing things, you know, I would say for you, you're so authentic. You know, what you stress, I think, to people really, really comes across. And having had my ass kicked in your boss up classes, I know that you can have a great time on the bike, but be really tough too. And the funny thing is when you say, you're going to hate me for this, but you got to do it. I'm like, yes, yes, I have to do it. So it's a really hard balance to have fun and yet really push people and do it in a way that, at least for me, I feel like you're pushing yourself too. So I really thank you for that. You know, when you go out and you do Love Squad events, what are the things you hear from folks? Or is there a story that someone shared with you that made you think, oh my God, this is why I do this? That was great.
Yeah, testimonies are always important. And I appreciate any of you that have come to a Love Squad event in person or virtually. Thank you for sending me all the great feedback. I think one of the events that stand out to me current right now in this moment, we do in April Equal Pay Day. And so we had an event around negotiating. And one of the hardest things for most women or non-binary that identify similarly is this idea of going into a room and negotiating with someone about their worth. And we had a moment of, it was probably about 125 people at this event. And this was the most emotional event that Love Squad had put on, in a sense.
Wow.
I did a one-on-one expert discussion with a financial advisor and a woman who runs a financial institution and an investment firm. And so we broke down into small groups, came back together and decided to do a little bit of a opening session of like, would you like to share with the group? And of course, just like any normal group of people, any usual group of people will say like, no, I don't have anything to share. So we waited patiently. That awkward silence does pay off after a while.
Right.
And so many of the women in the room actually raised their hand and came to tears in the fact that, yeah, I got a lateral promotion.
No money.
No money. No money. So I said, so you are telling me that you got promoted to do more work without compensation. And while sometimes that can be beneficial because I'm not knocking it, but there was no clarity around it. Or I got a no and I don't know what to do. I feel like they don't value me and I'm hurt. And so my advice, because as an entrepreneur and as a woman who has to figure out her career, I had to negotiate a lot of contracts without a lot of knowledge behind them. I said, the negotiation doesn't start until no. I said, what's the worst thing? And I'll give this tip for free. My Love Squad out there. What's the worst answer you could get when you walk into a room to negotiate for yourself? And most people said, no. I said, actually, that's the best answer you can get. The worst answer you can get is yes. Because guess what? Guess what, Sam? You go in a room and you said, hey, I need a promotion and I need it this. And your boss says, Sam, absolutely. And you walk out and you're like, I did it. You call your girlfriends, your mom. You're like, I did it. I got the promotion. I got the raise. I got more money. And they're like, how did it happen? You're like, I walked in there and I said, I needed this. And they said, yes. Okay. What you forgot though, is that I think your ask might've been too easy.
I think you're exactly right. Like, as you say that, if I did get that easy yes, I would think I should have asked for more, number one.
Exactly.
Or number two, oh my goodness, they know I should have had this already. And I've been late to the table and they're giving me something I should have had. So you are right. I'm not feeling good about that. I would feel better, I think, about a no. And then you come back to ask. So how do you tell people, go back in, put out your next offer?
Yeah. So once you get that no, you can either, again, some of us, including me, there are many meetings I've gotten a little bit emotional and I don't want to be the emotional one, not necessarily crying, but I'm like, okay, I need to actually think clearly. And then you can say, you know what? I'd love to follow up on this meeting. Can I put something on the calendar in the next 2 weeks? Give yourself time sincerely to think about it, digest it. Once you get that no, you go back to your manager, your whoever you report to directly and say, well, what's the roadmap to find that yes? I'd love a tangible roadmap to find that yes, because we're going to have, you know, you have your annual, biannual reviews. We're going to have these reviews again in the next few months. And so I want to make sure that I'm applying myself and offering and being of value, additional value to the company. They're always going to say it's budget. It's always bandwidth. It's always going to be something. Their job, just like when you want to hire someone to do anything in your house, you want to get the most amount of work for the least amount of money. So don't blame them for that, because everyone wants the same thing. It's your job to say, oh, no, my value add is this. And now you help me get there. Your manager's job is to help you get there. Give me a tangible roadmap and let's follow up. Make sure there's a follow-up meeting. So there's much more to that, because it's not just a one-size-fits-all. So, but that's, again, a more kind of cookie-cutter approach that could potentially help many people. And that has come out of the event. So that event in itself was iconic for Love Squad, because I didn't realize that so many people had problems negotiating. And I was like, yeah, let's talk about it. I love this moment.
Yes.
Reclaiming agency.
Yes. It's a great reminder. And I think the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, the more comfortable you get with asking, with maybe hearing no, with taking the time to do the work, to go back for the offer and realize it's always a process, and that the best things you're going to get might take that time and that really good thought. But to your point, you know, managers who you might be speaking to, you know, presumably they want to retain you. You are terrific value for them. You're a great performer. It's a lot easier to keep you than find somebody else. So keep those things in mind when you're asking for things, and ask, and always ask. So I'd love to talk about the Instagram series you have, Basics of Bossing Up. Let's talk about that. What is bossing up, and what are your best bossing up tips?
Absolutely. So Basics of Bossing Up. Nobody wants to be called basic, right? Everyone's like, oh, I don't want to be called basic. There's a moment in this new Netflix show, Emily in Paris, where she has this moment and he's like, well, you're just basic. And she's like, maybe I am basic, but I'm your customer. Like, I'm the one who's dreaming of your couture gowns. And all I can afford is this cheap keychain that I put on my purse. And so maybe I'm basic, but basic means something. And I'm like, you go, girl. Because I've always subscribed to that. This idea of getting back to the basics is not easy. Getting back to the basics is actually challenging. And so bossing up, to answer your question, is when I say be a boss, I'm not talking about, we were just talking about managers. I'm not talking about your manager. Everyone is a boss in their own right. Not because I said so, because your mother said so, your guardian said so. And so in that, it means setting the standard, establishing the tone. So setting the standard means when you go into work, you're not just going to follow the rules. What are the rules? I'm going to do exactly in the rules. No, you're going to be innovative. You're going to share thoughts and ideas. You're going to give yourself to each project. We all do that, right? Which is why they always talk about many of us millennials, or many of us in general, just that are listening, how we overwork ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We give ourselves to our job. The second thing about being a boss, and when I say you establish a standard and setting the tone, is that when you walk into the room, you have power. You have personal power to influence anyone around you. So if you walk in a room, I don't know if you've experienced this in a meeting and someone walks in, or even on Zoom at this point, people come in and they just have a really like sad, nasty face. You're like, oh, why are we being sad Sally today? Like, I don't need that energy. I just had my matcha or my tea or my coffee. And I'm just trying to live my best life.
Yeah.
Because that person has power. You have power. Your energy is contagious. So as a boss, you want to go ahead, and I talk about reclaim agency. You want to step into that power. When you walk in the room, you set the tone. You get to decide to be positive, to influence those around you, to smile, to provide energy, to be upbeat. You have that. And it's not to say go against how you're feeling that day. We're all entitled to many uncomfortable bad days because we are multifaceted people. But just knowing that's your responsibility as a boss. You know, and I think that that's what it boils down to is, are those two things, a tone and a standard. You live by a standard that's higher than the rules, and not that you're above the law or above the rules, but that you push beyond that and being innovative, and that you set that tone. Whenever you walk into a room or Zoom, you have that power. People care and you have it. It's in you. And that means you're a boss.
What I love about that is it comes from within. It is not dependent on your level, your experience, what other people are bringing to the table. It comes from you. And you always have that power to decide when and where you're going to bring it. And hopefully you can bring it consistently to your best ability. How do people respond to this? You know, when you're out there talking about this, and of course, I hear and see it from as a Peloton member, when you're out there also just talking to people through Love Squad, how do people respond?
I think most people have the aha moment. So when I do my Basics of Bossing Up, which is like a weekly series that comes out on my Instagram, it's less than 5 minutes. I'm usually talking like this because I want to get as much information in as possible. Most times, and I often say this, is that I'm not here to tell you anything new. I'm just here to remind you of who you are. Mm-hmm. And so the Basics of Bossing Up, is they're just reminders of how to be a good friend, how to evaluate friendship. It's just a reminder in terms of negotiating or budgeting or morning routines, how to establish new habits. Coming back to the basics. And so most times in the comment sections, a lot of the comments are, oh my gosh, I forgot about this. Oh yeah, I used to do this and I need to start doing this again. Or I was just having this problem and this reminded me of how to solve it or how to reconcile it. And so that in itself is that I know that I'm put on this earth. I don't think I can, for lack of a better cliche, recreate the wheel. And I don't think that there's any upside in that. Mm-hmm. And what I think though, is that we get so inundated with media, social media, feeling run down and ragged that we forget to get back to those simple things that work, the simple things that make us who we are. And so that's the basics of bossing up.
Oh, thank you. I love that. So let's talk about your role as a Peloton instructor and coach and this community, which is now 2 million strong or so. So you have this 3 million, woo! This platform, I think, has been so unbelievable, especially during this time when we've all needed to come together and we can't physically. The fact that the company modified things to do it from home, the fact that members encourage each other, you play a really strong role in this. And I think you bring a very unique angle and persona, frankly, to the instructors there. But I'd love to hear from your words, you know, what are you trying to convey? And especially when you have either your Boss Up rides, your Sundays with Love rides, and you have very different rides during the week, I think that might cater to different audiences. So tell us about what you're trying to do and how you'd like to reach people.
Absolutely. I think one, Peloton is an incredible company. I want to give a shout out to not only our members and our community, but of course, our instructors and those that work for Peloton all over the globe. We're a global company, 3 million plus strong. We've grown over the last 7 years quite a lot. And I will say, I am very grateful that I get to do what I do. I love what I do. I actually wrote this morning at 6 a.m. in a pop ride. And after the first song, I literally looked into the camera and I was like, do you understand that I love my job? Like, I am so grateful that I get to do this. And what I try to remember each time that I get on that bike, there's a couple things that I think makes Peloton unique. Obviously, it's the intersectionality of fitness, of media, and of course, of technology, this concept of innovating. We have a bike, we have a bike plus, we have a tread, we have a new Peloton tread that came out. And I think that we're always innovating, not only with hardware, but with software, with content itself. Is that this level of humanity that not only is the foundation of the culture in the corporate office, but also in our community is what I think sets us apart. The ability to know that just because I'm on the stage and I'm on the camera, it does not make me any better than you at your house in Kansas, in Wichita, Kansas, or in Germany, or in the UK, or in Canada. It does not. And I said this earlier, is that maybe I might be going through something as a woman, as an individual that's unique to me. But the fact that I am going through something, I know that I'm not alone. So saddling up, we have 25,000 people already counted themselves in for our first Sundays with Love season 2 that's happening this Sunday.
More will likely be there with you live, and certainly more will take it on replay. That's a huge number of folks who are dedicated.
Yeah. And I think it's, again, that level of humanity to say, we all want a great workout. We all want to enjoy it while we do it. Yeah. But one of the things that's really important to me, and to answer your question of what do I want to offer, is that I want to make sure that I create space for everyone. Again, I know how it feels to be on the outside looking in, knocking. I know how it feels to walk in and be a party of one We don't subscribe to that at Peloton. And so for our community, we want to make sure that whether I teach a classic rock, which I taught yesterday, or pop this morning, or country ride, or Sundays with Love, which is thought-provoking, spiritually grounded, a celebration of life, or that boss ride that you might be hating me during the ride, but you'll love me at the end because it's so hard. Yeah. I want to make sure that I'm able to not only provide world-class fitness in terms of science-based workouts and roadmaps, but I'm able to speak to you. I always say, I'm here to change your heart. I'm here to change your heart with my words. And it's a full body experience. One of the things that I came to a conclusion about during this pandemic is that we talk about self-care being only physical. You think you only saddled up to get a good workout. And the reality is, like I said, we're multidimensional. Yeah, your self-care, your well-being is made up of your physical well-being, but also your spiritual and your mental well-being. Yeah. So when you saddle up, you hear my words. And what I want you to do is I will also want you to feel my words. So you're getting that physical, that spiritual, and that mental workout that you didn't even know you needed. You're like, oh my God, I was just listening to like a pop song and I was just vibing out. I didn't know that it touched me in that way. And so it's kind of like wrapping your vegetables in some like cotton candy a little bit.
It's so funny you said that. When I took your pop class and you played Fireworks at the end by Katy Perry. Yeah. So I listened to that song, my 9-year-old daughter, and I've heard it a million times. And you said something along the lines of, and this is for all of you who don't know what to make for dinner and your kids are driving you crazy and you don't know what you're doing tomorrow. I'm like, that's me. And then I really started listening to the lyrics and I was like, yes, you know, really got into it. It's just funny how you've had that ability to encourage people and get really absorbed. So it is very meaningful. I'm wondering, when you prep for any of these rides, so you have to think about the music, of course. Are you thinking about what you want to say? Are you thinking about how to translate the music and those lyrics into your words of motivation and encouragement?
So I think it depends on the ride. So Sundays with Love takes me quite a while. I have a bunch of notes actually right in front of me in my purple notebook, because that's the color of the ride, around what we're going to talk about, because each ride is based on a virtue. It was a juxtaposition of it being spiritually grounded, but it started off around Aristotle's 12 virtues to make sure that there was a level of philosophy. And so Sundays with Love takes me a lot longer to plan, which I don't mind. But other rides, yes, it takes an hour or a couple hours depending on the ride itself. And we curate our own roadmap, our own playlist. And in terms of planning what I'm going to say, I don't.
In the moment.
Yeah, humanity. I want to feel what you're feeling. And so if you took the bus ride yesterday, there was a moment in the ride where I couldn't even cue you because I told us to go to a place and that resistance that was heavy. And I went there. And I'm literally breathless with a mic on talking to thousands of people. And the real truth is, can't speak right now, need air.
I really appreciate that, because I'm certainly falling off the mic. But I can understand that. And that's good to see. And we know you're doing it right alongside of us. And I think that's a really special thing to have. So you recently introduced bar classes. And yeah, talk about how that evolved and what makes you so excited about this form of exercise.
Really excited. We released a collection with another instructor, Hannah Corbin, and I. And it's 10 classes. And the reason why I was so excited about bar is because I'm a dancer. I came to New York to dance, and that's what I did. I danced with Beyonce. I danced with Pitbull, danced with Wyclef. I got to tour a little bit. I danced in La Grande Ballet. Like I've been able to dance and do summer programs and all these things while I was here in school. And so the ability to not only move my body on the bike, but then to unclip and take off my shoes and put on my bar socks and go back to some of those dancing roots, which I might add was a little bit nerve-wracking, because if any of you out there went to ballet classes when you were young, they were great for discipline, but they might have scarred you just a little bit.
Sure.
And so I had some of those moments where I was just like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually wear all white in the first class I shoot, because I wanted to go against the negative self-talk I had from those wounds that I had from ballet growing up. And so I wore white and I was like, I'm going to let here everybody is welcome here. And I wanted to celebrate that for myself and just like, again, go against the negative self-talk. And so, yeah, bar is a collection. It's also, I will say, a direct reflection of how Peloton's always innovating, listening to the community. That was something our community said that they wanted. And I was asked if I would be down to teach it. And I was like, yeah, let's rock and roll, baby. And so it's incredible. It's there on demand under Strength. You can find it. And so we're always listening to our members and innovating with them in the forefront of our head. Mm-hmm. And so just give us time. If you're like, where's more? There's more, but we're here trying to not only be thoughtful around our content, but also make sure it's polished and up to standards so we can continue to lead from the front.
And these classes are hard, I can attest. Like, they are killers, core killers, but very fun. So you talk to folks, obviously, during your classes. You have a very robust social presence on social media. How do you maintain your privacy? And how do you talk to folks out there, but sort of say, you know, kind of enough's enough at a certain point, putting a lot out there. And sometimes you don't really need to hear back from everybody on what they think about every single thing you're doing. You know, how do you do that for yourself? Set those boundaries.
Yeah, sometimes the DMs, you just got to look away. You got to look away. There's a lot of unsolicited feedback that comes my way. But one of the things that this came up for me quite early when I started social media and being a little bit more in public facing, particularly when I started hosting for the Nets, because that was my first platform where I was the only talent on the court, 18,000 fans, 41 home games plus playoff and preseason. And what I realized and what I've also just made sure that I've been steadfast about is privacy and transparency are two different things. Mm. And so I want to be transparent with my community. I want them to trust me because I trust them. I teach my community how we engage with each other, how we speak to each other, how you show up in my comment section, how I would show up in your comment section. Mm. I often remind our community, I am someone's daughter. I'm someone's partner. I'm someone's sister. I'm someone's granddaughter. And if any of my family, if my grandma looked at these comment section, even though she probably doesn't know how to work Instagram right now, but if she did, or my mom looked, I wouldn't want her to feel disappointed or hurt by a comment that you left. And so I make sure that I'm outspoken about that, is that don't ever misuse the transparency and the trust that I have, that I want to give you insight to what does a life around Ally Love looks like. And it's not to say I want to just boost my own brand. Sincerely, Sam, it goes back to that concept of Love Squad, is if I can help you get from point A to point B, which took me 2 hours, yeah, if I can get you there in 90 minutes or 60 minutes, then job well done. And the only way to do that is to offer information, to offer insight. And that comes through my social platforms. And so I am transparent because I'm hoping not only to make sure that things are aspirational, as we talked about, but of course, making sure that I'm offering information to those that follow me that's useful. Within that, there's much about me that I make sure I protect when it comes to my family, because I don't think that it should compromise their privacy or how they want to live, because I'm somewhat of a public figure. And so I'm mindful to make sure that there is a line. Sometimes it can be fine, but there's a line between transparency and privacy. And so I do pride myself on making sure that the public doesn't have access to certain rooms in my house or certain areas of my life or certain days of my week or certain people, because I want to be protective and respectful of my legacy, of my heritage, and those that around me are the unsung heroes that you don't see on Instagram. I want to be respectful so they can continue to thrive.
It all makes sense. I love that. You know, talk about this year. What's been some of the greatest challenges for you in this pandemic? And have you gotten through them? You know, are there things you've done with your diet, your exercise regimen, sleep, things that really helped you and made a difference to you?
What hasn't? This pandemic has really put ourselves in the mirrors. We're like, hey, go talk to the person in the mirror. Are you that person? I think that the challenges we face, not only with COVID-19, but also with family and work and finances, dreams and timelines. Wow, timelines. Those of you out there that were supposed to get married, or we had timelines. And so those plans were put on hold, if not shut down, if not sincerely destroyed for some people. And so I think for me, in facing these challenges, I often say in life, and you will hear it if you ride with me on Peloton, if I say, if it's hard, I raise my hand, sign me up. This has been a hard time. And in the moments of it being overwhelmingly challenging, I remind myself, if anyone can handle hard, it's me. I didn't say if anyone deserved hard. So whoever's listening, I didn't say that you deserve this or I deserve this. My natural reaction, Sam, is like, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be put in this position. It's not what you deserve. Right now we're facing it and we're facing it together. And so if anyone can handle it, I think it's me. And so that's something that I've talked myself through during this time. I mean, the silver lining here is I've used it for self-awareness. I've gotten a lot of my best thoughts. I've asked myself a lot of these questions. Who am I? Who do I want to be? Who do people see me as? Those three questions I had to ask quite a bit this year, more than biannually. And so it's given me time to think, what kind of daughter do I want to be? Am I being that daughter to my mom? How can I be better of support? I also had the luxury of audiobooks. I think reading is a luxury I can't afford at this point in my life. And so I have leaned into resources and really listening instead of speaking so much, because I do speak a lot here. You're still listening to this podcast. I'm speaking. So I think, yeah, a lot of it, to answer your question, a lot of it is hard. But again, I raise my hand if it's hard. And if anyone, I remind myself when I wake up, if anyone can get through hard, it's me. And something that my boyfriend Andrew always says, who he is my secret weapon for sure. He always says around situations or circumstances, it may be hard and it may be easy, but it's not complicated. And so I think when we are living in the less complicated situations, even particularly with COVID, we're living in this grief or happiness. We don't know. It's just a very anticipatory state. Just cherish the moments that it's hard, cherish the moments that it's easy.
Yeah, speaking of challenges, I had read that as a child, you were in a car accident and you were told you might not walk normally after that. That is unbelievable news to hear as a child. I mean, I can't imagine what your parents thought. How did you overcome that? And what did that experience teach you in terms of your ability to overcome things like that? Talk about challenges, and this year certainly was. But it sounds like you were facing a life-threatening challenge, a significant one, and you've already had the experience of overcoming that. So how did that change who you were, you know, since that time?
I was 9 years old. I got hit by a car going to the ice cream truck from a cousin. Oh. Looked both ways, crossed the street. Car was parked behind the ice cream truck, and it hit me. I broke my left femur, put me in the hospital for 7 days. And it was around the fourth day. I had to wait for 4 days with a weight at the end of my ankle separating my femur bone that broke. Oh. Because they didn't have a pin or a plate, as they call it, for a 9-year-old girl, because who breaks their hips? Older people. And so the reality is, as we talk about COVID and this concept of hard, easy versus complicated, this story during this time has come up for me. I have never really shared this story until the last 6 months of being in a pandemic. And it was me doing this internal work, asking myself all these questions. And I brought myself to start sharing this story in particular because I, along the journey of those three questions, who am I, who do I want to be, who do people see me as? I wanted to know too, why did I believe some of the things I believe right now? Like, why do I believe it now? And why did I? And I started just like taking moments of thinking. I put on moments on my calendar to think about thinking. And this moment came up for me. And I remember a conversation that I had with my mom. I never forgot the conversation, but I replayed it during this pandemic. And my mom said, she talked to the doctor, came in the room, and I was laying there. And she said, listen, it's not looking good. You have two options. Your first option is that if you feel like the fight is too hard, you can go on. You can let go. You can let go. Your dad and I have spoken about it. We will support it. Your second option is that you can fight. You can pray to God and you can fight. I cannot fight for you. If I could, I would. She said, why don't you think about it and you decide and you let us know what you want to do. I do not think at any point in my life I could have that conversation with anyone, let alone my child, who's 9 years old. And this is why my mother has always had my respect in the utmost, is that what she did that day shaped who I am. She came back. I said, hey, mom, I think I figured it out, mom. I do want to fight. Like, I'm going to keep praying to God, you know, in my little kid voice. I'm going to pray to God. I want to fight. Like, I want to, you know, and it wasn't like she was encouraging me to give up. What she did was she taught me a valuable lesson. I often talk about reclaiming agency, stepping into your power. My mother put me in a position at 9 years old to make a decision about my life. To decide to live was my choice and only I could make it. So not only did I make a decision, a big decision, I made a decision to live and I made a decision to pray. And I never stopped doing those things since. I live my life to the fullest every day. I'm always down for a party, a good time, and I always am praying. And so I think that that was the moment that I had forgotten for many years that put me on this course of, sure, tell me no. I'm going to find a yes in here somewhere. By the way, that's always my line. Let's find a yes in here somewhere. Use it, please. That's how I am, to always live each day. Like, each day could be your last. I know what this feels like. Moments are precious. Life is precious. As we know, we're living through a pandemic. I always say, I don't want you to just live your life or be alive. I want you to live your life. Don't just be here and be alive. I know we are overwhelmed. I know we're underpaid, overworked, struggling. The relationship isn't perfect sometimes. The friendships, where are they? The communication with the parents aren't always on. But if we can just decide to live each day fully, because we don't know. And so being in that moment, yeah, I continuously pray and I continuously decide to live each day. And so, yeah, that's shaped me in terms of how I make decisions right now. It shaped me in terms of how I persevere, how I look at life, how I'm grateful for my life. And not to say I don't have bad days, because I too, I'm not positive Patty that sometimes I come across to be. I too have bad days. And I try to share that as much as possible. Instagram is a small aperture of life. It is not real. It is curated on everyone's behalf. So that's why it's important to me when I show up in these interviews, when I show up on that bike, when I show up on my IG lives or Basics of Bossing Up or Love Squad events or hosting the Brooklyn Nets, that I'm as real as I can be and honest as I can be, but of course, representing the brand with excellence and being my best self. So yeah, just keep that in mind. We're in it together.
Okay. That story gave me chills for so many reasons. I'm the mother of a 9-year-old daughter, and the thought that your mother said that to you, I mean, it's bringing tears to my eyes. I don't know if I would have that strength to be that way with her, because I'd be scared. And the fact that she was that way and then taught you something is really remarkable. But I think what came out of that too is you prayed and you chose, but you also were a fighter through the challenging times. That is a really strong lesson. I just want to put that on the record. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So now that you've got your portfolio life and you're doing the things that you want to do, let's go back to this. What does fulfillment look like to you? Is there something else you want to achieve? Do you want to just keep going with all the things that you've chosen so far? Or, you know, is there something new on the horizon at some point, whether it's 5-10 years down? You know, do you think there's something else?
I think there is evolution. So I think that life evolves. 5 years ago, I haven't even been at Peloton 5 years. I wouldn't have told you that I'd be here talking to you about this. Basics of Bossing Up didn't exist. This concept of what a boss looks like, setting the standard, establishing the tone was not a thing. Love Squad was not a thing. It had just maybe started. And so I think when I really focus on the trajectory of my life, and I talked about it to kind of tie it full circle in the very beginning, is taking that next step. What does that next step look like? And the reason I do that and not necessarily have an end goal of what my ideal picture is that I might make a mess. I might think it's a masterpiece at the time. And then cut to 5 years later, I look back and I say, wow, that was a crappy thing that I put together there that I thought I should have been, the person I should have done. And so I don't want to put myself in a position where I'm like, I should have done this. I should have done that. I don't want to do that. Yeah. And so I think of my career in more so terms of it evolving over time and taking that next step. Right now, I will say that there's a lot of room for me to grow at Peloton. I'm learning so much about myself, about community. It's a company I want to always be a part of. And I love my job as an instructor. I love this concept of live TV. So any way that I can continue to add that in, but I think it's more of how it evolves and not necessarily giving up something to do something else or adding something in. It's just like, how are these things going to evolve? They all evolved into each other and complemented each other over the years. And I would have never been able to articulate or see this or dream of this. And so I always leave myself to think about, I am very thoughtful and strategic around my career and my career trajectory, but in the short term. I do know I want a family. I do know that I have those pictures of being a grandma, like somebody's meemaw. And I'm like baking this bread, this signature bread that I've been working on. That for some strange reason, I don't know why that's a thing. So I do think of things like that. That's a little bit more less career focused and more, what do I want in my personal life? Is that I want my grandkids to walk in the house and inhale and say, oh, is our grandma here? Because we smell her bread. You know, I don't know. That's true happiness for me right now.
I love
long term.
That is a vibrant picture. And I'm so glad you brought up the personal side, because when people are asked that career question, they often say, oh, I want to get to XYZ place. And it's all about the professional side without that balancing personal side. And of course, we all have that. And you can't have that fulfillment without thinking about both of them. So that's great. So Allie, thank you so much for being here with us on this podcast. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you and really hear from all aspects of your life. And I know our audience is just going to be really inspired and aspire to do great things.
No, thank you so much for having me. It has been a pleasure. And those of you that have stuck around to the end, I want to say thank you so much for not only allowing me into your ears, but also into your hearts. And hopefully the conversation that Sam and I just had is just a starter. Please share it with anyone, because that's true conversation.
Wow. If that conversation doesn't give you motivation to boss up, I'm not sure what will. I'm so impressed by Allie and how thoughtful she is about the content she delivers to her audience through her Peloton workouts and on social media. She shared so many great insights, including negotiation tips, the importance of self-reflection, and perseverance. I hope you found inspiration and aspiration from our conversation. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. is a member of the FDIC.